Für alle ein Fest. Zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Volvic Naturell. 1,5 Liter für nur 49 Cent. Zuzüglich Pfand. Oder Almare Räucherlachs XXL. 220 Gramm für nur 3,49 Euro. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
We got a great episode coming up, but first let me tell you about the Jace case from Jace Medical. You remember the days of the pandemic, you remember the supply chain issues, you remember not being in control of your family's future when it, regards to whether it was food or supplies or medicines. Well, the medicine thing continues to go on, even though we're past the pandemic. As of March, there were more than 200 drug shortages right here in the United States, and it's looking like it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better. Healthcare experts have been talking about this, wondering why here in America we're having these problems. It shouldn't happen here, but you can stop this with the Jace case. You just get prepared ahead of time. It provides five life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. All you have to do is fill out a simple form online, and you'll have it right there, ready in case you need it. Of course, the supply chain issues are a big deal. It's very true. But honestly, like, the biggest thing about the Jace case that I love is just being able to take control of my own life. That's what I think is important. JaceMedical.com. Enter the code STU and check out the whole package that they have. You can get all sorts of add-on stuff. They have a ton of stuff, a lot of different options. Just go there and check it out. It's JaceMedical.com. JaceMedical.com. The code is STU. J-A-S-E Medical.com. The code is STU.
Stu Does America.
Don't miss out on the free State of the Race podcast. It's a bonus pod. It's coming very, very soon. I don't know if we'll have one this week, but we will have one coming probably next week. And then as we go forward, more and more episodes of State of the Race. Stu Does America is the stream you go to. Just search for Stu Does America. Subscribe audio only wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also get State of the Race when they come out, and you'll get them first. Be sure to check out the show on YouTube as well, youtube.com/Stu Does America. Be sure to like and comment on our videos and hit the bell for notifications. Angela Morabito is going to be here to discuss Joe Biden's horrendous Title IX revisions. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has some interesting thoughts about African-Americans and computers, which we'll tell you about. But we're going to start by doing the mythical ceasefire. Everyone wants a ceasefire. Very important. Got to have a ceasefire. Everyone in the media is cheering this on all the time. And of course, the college protesters are cheering it on. Have we checked in with the college protesters lately? Let's look at that. Oh, shocking. Anti-Israel protesters vandalize a World War I memorial and burn an American flag after cops block group from reaching star-studded Met Gala. And this is what that looked like. Gaza. Now, they can't seem to spell Palestine correctly, but they can spell Gaza. It's only four letters, so it's right in their wheelhouse. But they got that right. Outrage as pro-Palestine activists, quote unquote. I mean, I hate that verbiage. They're pro-Hamas, most of them. They stage a stop genocide protest as thousands of Israelis, including Holocaust and October 7th survivors, walk to Auschwitz in the March of the Living event to honor victims of Nazi World War II atrocities. This is a tasteful thing. You know, people think, hey, but I have to protest the Jews on Holocaust Remembrance Day. I have to. You actually don't. I know it's shocking to hear, but like a lot of people are like, wait a minute, don't I have to say that Jews are bad on Holocaust Remembrance Day when a bunch of October 7th survivors are there? No. There are actually other options, and apparently they just didn't want to take any of those. Now, it's interesting because you see our policy, and it's kind of like a big question mark right now, right? Like the people at the Free Gaza protests are angry at Joe Biden. They call him Genocide Joe, which is completely absurd because he's much more favorable to screwing with Israel than you think he is. But you understand where some of this comes from. You'd think, wouldn't he be strong on Israel? This has been a big part of his support over the years. People like Chuck Schumer are supposedly big pro-Israel people. You'd think that this would be something the Democrats would latch onto and support Israel in this moment. Not really. But you understand that, remember these people are like, they're not statues, right? Abraham Lincoln sitting there in the big chair, made of stone. That's not reality. These are real people with the same issues that you have at your house when your spouse is in your ear going blah, 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 blah all the time. That's happening to Joe Biden, too. Stop it now. Jill Biden privately urges an end to the conflict in Gaza. President recounted the First Lady's concerns as he was pressed about the war at a meeting with Muslim community members. He's just getting in his ear from Jill. It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. But maybe explaining why we seem so schizophrenic on Israel right now as with national policy. It's fascinating. And it's been kind of bubbling up to the surface here recently. There was a ceasefire agreement. That's how at least how the mainstream media was reporting it. Basically, Hamas comes out and they say, hey, well, we accept the agreement, the truce. We're on board. Thank you very much. Everyone goes crazy. The media says, finally, Israel came to the table with something. Even though it's weird that Hamas was announcing that they agreed to it. So it seems like Israel's been proposing this the entire time. Of course, that's the truth. Israel has been proposing all sorts of ceasefires, and it's Hamas that's saying no. No one ever seems to address that. Does anyone ever ask if Hamas wants a ceasefire? Because they keep firing rockets at Jews. Doesn't seem like much of a ceasefire there, but they don't agree to the terms. They don't want to return all of the different hostages and such. So they just keep saying no. Finally, they said yes. At least that's how the media saw it. Then we kind of found out that they didn't actually agree to the ceasefire at all. The New York Times writes this up in the most charitable way possible for Hamas. Officials describe pact Hamas has embraced as U.S.-Israel proposal with small changes. Well, I mean, small changes. Why aren't you going to go there? Proposal for a hostage prisoner exchange and a ceasefire that Hamas said on Monday that it could accept as minor, wording changes from the one that Israel and the United States had presented to the group recently, according to two officials familiar with the revised proposal. The officials said that the changes were made by Arab mediators in a consultation with William J. Burns, the CIA director, and the new version keeps a key phrase, the eventual enactment of a sustainable calm, wording that all sides had said earlier they could accept. Now, you're thinking to yourself, well, what are the wording changes, right? They made some wording changes. What are wording changes? You know, it's interesting, and it's not exactly how you normally negotiate a contract. You can't accept something that someone has proposed to you, change a bunch of words, and then say, okay, now I have agreed, so there's a deal in place. Like, it has to go back and forth to both sides. The proposal, they said, here are the changes. Calls for Hamas to free hostages, women, the elderly, and those in need of medical treatment. But it is not clear how many women and elderly are still alive. And the first tranche could end up including remains. Well, wait, you're offering me a truce by saying, hey, by the way, a lot of the people we're going to give you back are just body parts, just so you know in advance. Could be a lot of dead people in the hostage package. That is not negotiating in good faith, I think it's clear. One of the officials in the Middle East said the Hamas viewed the term as an end to the war, with Israel halting its military actions and withdrawing troops from Gaza. The officials said that Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was expected to push back against that definition because they've been very clear. This is not the end of the war. The war ends when Hamas is gone. That's it. Period. That's how it works. You want a ceasefire? Maybe there can be a ceasefire. Now, of course, all of this happened after Israel gave up on the negotiations and said, all right, this is ridiculous. We're just going in. We're going to go into Rafah. We're going to get these people in Hamas eliminated, and then we can look toward the future. As soon as they started moving troops in and started hitting them, then they were like, we accept your deal, with a few of their fancy red lines included into it. Now, if you're negotiating a contract with someone and, you know, you go get a new job and someone offers you $50,000 a year, you don't get to look at that contract and be like, okay, I'm going to cross out that $50,000. I'm just going to write in $100,000 and sign it. And we've agreed to a job contract. That's not the way that works. Both sides have to agree. You can offer changes. You could redline a contract and say, hey, I want this, I want that. But that's just a negotiation. That's just a continuation of a negotiation. Is it enough to get Israel back to the table and delay what is going on? It's not quite clear. Daily Wire put it a little bit differently than did the New York Times. Hamas accepts imaginary negotiation deal that Israel never offered. The claim instantly went viral on social media and dominated breaking news headlines across the media landscape as the war in Gaza enters its seventh month. Israeli officials quickly came out and disputed Hamas's claims, noting that the Palestinian Islamic Terror group agreed to things that were never offered by Israel. Hamas agreed to a deal that it came up with Egypt and did not include any discussion with Israeli officials, said the Times of Israel. That's kind of an important part of this. Like, if the Israelis are negotiating with someone, they should at least be asked whether they agree to the terms of the deal. Seems sort of basic, honestly, at this point, but of course, that's where we are. Now, Israel is looking at this and realizing what Hamas is doing. Look, this is a delay tactic, right? You say, oh, no, we're not going to negotiate. We're not going to negotiate. We're not going to negotiate. Oh, you're coming in? Oh, we've accepted your deal. Oh, the deal's changed. Well, we should negotiate more. They're buying time, right? That's what they're doing. Israel tanks are now set to roll into Rafah after the war cabinet okays offensive. Israeli tanks and troops appear to push their way into the southern Gaza city of Rafah. Now, this is early Tuesday. Early this morning in Jerusalem, said a truce offer from the Hamas terror group did not meet its demands and announced that it had okayed moving ahead with the long-threatened offensive. The Israeli military said it was conducting targeted strikes against Hamas in eastern Rafah, thought to be the terror group's final stranglehold. There was a number that came out a few weeks ago that said there was something like 40,000 Hamas members when this whole thing started, and 26,000 of them were already captured or dead, leaving 14,000. If those numbers are to be believed, and it seems like they were credible, and this is a couple of weeks ago, so the numbers have probably changed a little bit. But if those numbers are to be believed, there's 14,000 or so hanging out in Rafah. This is it's getting close to the end of this. You know, there's no reason for anyone to believe that Israel is trying to do anything other than get rid of Hamas. Now, you might say, well, what about those aid workers that got killed? There are mistakes in war. And look, there are casualties in war that are not the direct targets. This is one of the reasons, just one of the reasons, that war sucks. And you should try to avoid it if it's at all possible. We all understand that. It's not possible when people come across your border and kill 1,200 and rape them and murder them, and you just can't put up with that. If you do that, you're going to wind up with a country that this is happening to all the time. You have to be able to do something about it. But, like, can we step back for a second and talk about this? I mean, they're calling Joe Biden Genocide Joe, which is a term assuming that Biden is on Israel's side, which there's very limited evidence of. But let's just say that that's true anyway. Is Israel committing a genocide? If they are, they are terrible at it. And you'd think, as a group of people that have been the victims of genocide so many times, perhaps they would have learned how it's done. But no, instead, what they do is come out and continually warn people where they're going to be bombing, tell people to evacuate areas that they're coming into, tell people to give up the hostages and we will just stop. And, I mean, if they are committing a genocide, this is the worst genocide of all time. You don't negotiate a ceasefire when you're trying to commit a genocide. It doesn't make any sense. You don't need to do that. The Nazis weren't like, oh, hey, Jews, it's totally fine. Let's negotiate a ceasefire. We are really just want to make sure that you don't think we're coming after you. That's not what you do. Look, they're coming after Hamas. That is real. And there's going to be no ceasefire against Hamas. There may be a delay. That's possible. But if you're committing genocide, probably not the best thing to do to give hundreds of thousands of people a heads up on the areas you're going to be bombing. That's just not how a genocide works. Has anyone ever seen one before? I know they always say never forget. It seems like the entire media has already forgotten. There's a lot of reports in the media right now, famine conditions in the north. Well, there's not supposed to be anybody in the north. If you remember, this area was evacuated. So there shouldn't be famine conditions in the north because no one should be there to try to be eating food. Are there famine conditions in Antarctica? Probably not, because that's the way Antarctica is. No one's supposed to be there. Maybe you're there on a science mission, but nobody lives there all the time. You shouldn't expect a bunch of food to be there. Why? You're not supposed to be there. This is one of the conditions of what's going on there. And if you don't like that, I have a recommendation for you. Stop murdering Jews. This is a really, really tough one to achieve, I know, for you, Hamas, but just a generalized recommendation. Are we supposed to provide food to the people who are completely ignoring the evacuation orders? Is that what we're supposed to be doing? The Hamas members that stuck around, should we be getting them a buffet? How is this supposed to work exactly? Rafah is where Hamas is. And because of that fact, that means Israel has to go in. Israel has no choice but to go in. Israel must go in and root out Hamas. They must get this over with. If they don't do this now, they will pay for it for years and years and years in the future. They have no choice in this matter. No choice whatsoever. And everyone can sit here on their little soapboxes and get all high and mighty and say, well, I wouldn't do that. Well, I would just let them come in and murder 1,200 of our people. I know that sounds appealing, but when it actually happens to you, you get a kind of a sharp edge about it. And that's what Israel should have. They could do this a couple different ways. They could carpet bomb everybody in the city. They could go into Rafah and completely destroy it and make sure all the people are still there and kill as many people as possible, whether they're in Hamas or they're just regular citizens. You could do that. In fact, that's how warfare has been carried out for centuries. Okay? Because America came along and decided to change that fact, we now expect everybody to have precision-guided weapons that never kill anyone who isn't the target. That doesn't always happen in war, even with America. America, you know, led the way on trying to prioritize civilian life. And others give lip service to this. But America and its allies are really the only ones who seem to really do it with any regularity. Israel is one of the countries. There's not a lot of countries on earth that would accept what Israel just had perpetrated against them and do anything other than just destroy as much as possible. They are holding back. They could have gone in a long time ago. They're not going to have problem militarily going in here. The question is whether they can get their hostages out. And I don't mean remains. Look, I'm all about a respectful burial. Okay? But remains are not the most important thing right now. Remains are something the family obviously wants. But at the end of the day, holding up this war to collect remains, to me, is ill-advised. Get this job done if you're Israel. You have to. Israel is taking risks to its own military. They are looking at this and saying, well, we could just go in there and wipe all these guys out. We could just go in there and take them by surprise. They know if there is a temporary ceasefire, let's say 6 weeks, Hamas will use this time to regroup, to rearm, to do all the things they want to do so that they kill more Israeli citizens and Israeli military members. They know that's the end of this. That will definitely occur if Israel does not get this job done with. However, they're doing it anyway. Again, they're terrible at genocide if that's what they're going for. But you can't just leave 14,000 Hamas members in southern, in Rafah and other areas of Gaza toward the south and expect this to not be your life forever. You can't do that. 14,000 is way too many. Not to mention, understandably, by the way, some of the people in the Palestinian territories that were already anti-Israel have become more radicalized because, of course, there's a war. So that gives you even more problem here. However, it's a problem that they have no choice but dealing with. You know, I mean, it's just the truth is you're going to have thousands and thousands and thousands of people here who are going to either need to be imprisoned or killed. That is war. It's not something that people are happy about, and it's not something that we have to be involved in. This is not a decision for the United States to be involved in, though I know Jill Biden would like the case to be otherwise. The end of the story here is that Israel must eliminate Hamas. They must. If you were a citizen living anywhere near that border, you'd think the exact same thing. But because we're way over here, a lot of people on the left can easily sit back and say, oh, well, it's no big deal. Israel's so big and tough, pushing around that poor little those poor little people in the Palestinian territories and into Gaza and Rafah. I get that. I understand that that's their opinion. Would be nice if someone else in the region, maybe if they really want to support some refugees, let them in Egypt, let them in Jordan. Let's see how that goes. Go ahead. Take them. I don't think anyone's going to stop you, but they don't want any part of this either. The end of the story is you can't just let this organization regroup. You can't let them reform. You have to take them out now. And while it's difficult, while you are having a decent amount of pressure to stop, you can't stop. You have to push through it because no one's going to want you to start this up again later on. Once things get back to quote unquote normal, no one's going to be like, okay, well, now they found a few more. They can go back in. Get this job done while you have the opportunity and end this problem, not only for the Israelis, but also for the average Palestinian citizens who don't want to be ruled by terrorists.
Stu does America.
If you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or if you maybe have one, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, now is the time to check them out because they've launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. I got to get myself a pair of these. I have an older pair of Raycons. If they're updating, I want the new ones because Raycon is awesome. They're upgraded everyday earbuds, also have active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair two devices at once. I don't think I've ever had headphones that have that feature. That's really cool. Plus, they're available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. Ooh, yes, that's right. Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So no matter what you're waiting for, you can go and get your Raycons at buyraycon.com/dude. These things are great because unlike other earphones, they kind of like droop below your ear, fall out all the time. You go like this, you knock the bottom of them and they pop out of your ear. It never happens with Raycons. They fit flush to your ear. You can, if you want to put your head on a pillow and you're going to sleep, maybe listening to a fantastic podcast like this one, you can do that. They don't like, they're not going to slam into your ear like that. They're just really well designed and you're really going to like them. Not to mention, they cost a lot less than those other brands. Buyraycon.com/dude. BuyRaycon.com/Stu. Go there today. Get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. 20% off free shipping right now at buyraycon.com. BuyRaycon.com/Stu. I want to bring in Angela Morabito. She is the former U.S. Department of Education press secretary, a visiting fellow of the Independent Women's Forum, and spokesperson for the Defense of Freedom Institute. They got a big lawsuit going on right now that you need to know about. Angela, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, Stu. It's great to be back.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Let's take this from the very beginning. Let's go back in time, get the flux capacitor fired up, go back to the beginning 50 years ago or so when Title IX comes into play initially. What was it supposed to do at the beginning?
Well, first of all, that is a clutch movie reference. Yeah. And it was supposed to be a law that protects the rights of students from discrimination on the basis of sex in education. It said that any program or activity receiving federal funding could not discriminate on the basis of sex.
Okay, it seems pretty basic here. Okay, so we all kind of understand how that goes, and we see it play out a lot in women's sports and colleges, and that kind of is the extent of it for a long time until Barack Obama gets a hold of it. And he makes major sort of sweeping changes into the scope as to what Title IX actually does. Can you kind of bring us to that period?
He did. So the Obama era was quite sadly an era of kangaroo courts in which a great many students had their due process rights completely violated and they lost out on their college careers effectively. These people had their lives ruined based on false accusations. Then the schools just ran with it. They didn't have the due process that they needed and deserved. So then during the Trump administration, I very proudly served under Secretary DeVos, and she said, this has got to go. This is not the right thing for students. And she authored the 2020 Title IX rule that is actually still in effect right now. And it's doing an excellent job of protecting all students. It's withstood countless legal challenges. It protects students' rights. And quite frankly, it just codifies what Title IX was originally created to do.
Yeah, and a lot of this, you know, wind up hitting all sorts of students. You know, the type of students, you might sometimes minority students that the left always says they're trying to protect. When Barack Obama put these things in, there were people being accused of terrible, terrible crimes with no opportunity to defend themselves, not even to know what the accusations of these crimes were. They were in court. They couldn't defend themselves. They couldn't have representation. I mean, it was a real mess. You guys came in, you cleaned all this up, and it was not easy because, as I'm sure you remember, the media inertia at the time was to go the exact opposite direction. I mean, people couldn't believe, I mean, what Betsy DeVos was accused of. I mean, just trying to help rapists and all these terrible, terrible things. That was what the tenor of that time was. Thankfully, you guys stepped in. But of course, obviously, Joe Biden is here to screw this all up all over again. He's now put in a new package of changes for Title IX. Can you walk us through what they are? Because it's really incredible.
Sure. So the biggest change and really the worst of the bunch, in my opinion, that President Biden is making is he has decided that the word sex in the law in Title IX now includes gender identity. Of course, that's just not true. People know what sex is. It's biological. They know it today. They knew it in 1973 when Title IX was enacted. But Biden has decided that apparently the law just is not friendly enough to transgender students. And instead, he's going to force every single school in America that takes any kind of federal funding to treat students in line with their gender identity and not their biological sex. This means this is the end of women-only restrooms, women-only locker rooms. It means that if someone is misgendered or mispronounced or whatever the word of the day is right about now, that could constitute a hostile environment, and a school that allows that could find itself on the receiving end of a federal investigation.
It's really fascinating. How serious is this? Because I know when, you know, we talk about these like bathroom issues, people going into the opposite bathrooms, there are real world examples of this occurring, though you could also go into Target bathroom 500 times and not see any, you know, woman in a men's bathroom, men in a women's bathroom. Like, it's not necessarily a day-to-day thing. However, here in college, it really could become that type of thing. The colleges and the universities would seemingly have no ability whatsoever to push back against any student who said they were a woman one semester. I mean, you know, we've all seen movies about college, right? Like, we all know how this is going to turn out.
You'll have to keep from crying because this rule is so incredibly harmful to women. It means that all you have to do to enter a women's restroom or women's spaces on campus is just raise your hand and say, I feel female today. And the school has to respect that. At the college level, it's devastating, but also at the K-12 level, it's really harmful to kids because you have more and more kids, this is proven to be on the rise, who are identifying as transgender, who are rejecting, at least for some amount of time, their biological sex. But what studies have shown time and again is that most of those kids will grow out of it. So, quote unquote, affirming their gender and using their chosen name, chosen pronouns, is not the right thing for them. And yet that is exactly what Biden is forcing schools to do, even if the parents object to it or don't even know it's happening.
You guys are over at the Defense of Freedom Institute, are part of this lawsuit that's going on now. And it's an important one. I keep coming back to this solution. I don't know if politics can solve this, honestly. If people bounce back and forth between parties. Everyone's doing executive orders when they're in there. It changes every single term. I think, you know, filing these lawsuits and actually punishing some of this worst behavior is something that can actually lead to some change. This one in particular, going directly after Title IX. What are you guys trying to do with this?
We are, quite frankly, trying to save Title IX as we know it and as it has stood to protect the rights of women for 50 years. I think the Biden administration's motto, if I had to guess, would be if it ain't broke, break it. Because we had the 2020 rule in place that was making Title IX work for students, and yet they have decided to go in and use a law that protected women for so long against us. So we very proudly filed the first lawsuit in the nation. We were joined by 4 states and just recently 17 school districts in Louisiana in saying this rule is illegal. The president does not have the authority to decide what sex means in the law. So we are really optimistic that people are going to see how plainly unlawful this rule is. And our goal is to block it, make sure that it cannot do the harm that it would do to students when it takes effect on August 1st.
Yeah. And you know, it comes down to some really fundamental American rights. You know, we talk about the right to free speech a lot and all the different parts that are outlined in the Constitution. But one of the most crucial things and one of those serious violations of the freedom of speech is actually compelling speech. If you are forcing someone to say something they don't want to say, that is also a violation of free speech. It's not just shutting people up. We always think about, oh, people getting edited on the internet and all these other things that people throw the First Amendment around on. Compelling speech is like the most central violation of this. And that is a real part of what Biden is doing in Title IX.
Exactly. This goes back to the issue of gender identity, especially in young kids. Let's say you are a second grade teacher and one of your students, let's say Timmy decides to be Tammy. If your religious beliefs say, I'm not going to call Timmy Tammy, I'm going to call this person by the name given to them by their parents and use those pronouns that match their biological sex, the Biden rule says too bad. that you're creating a hostile environment and the school has to step in. If the school doesn't step in, that district risks losing all of its federal funding. So this is a huge problem, not only for students, but for educators as well, because they are having their rights trampled.
Mm. I mean, you're essentially, we all agreed on this like 2 weeks ago. So let me take you back again on the flux with the flux capacitor. If someone is saying they are a woman, when you know they are a man, or in this case, maybe a girl and a boy, saying that they are a girl is a lie. You know what this person is, and you're forcing children to embrace a lie here. And like, look, you have all the sympathy in the world for someone going through something like this, but asking someone else, a child, to deceive and lie and say things they know aren't true is not a long-term thing that's going to benefit civilization.
It is not. It's absolutely cruel to lie to children and to force children to lie to each other and to the world around them. These are kids who don't really know what gender identity is yet, and it's not the school's job to teach them or to try to shape that in any way. But what this Title IX rule does is it bakes that progressive ideology into the proverbial cake of education, and it says you will speak this way, you will follow these rules, you will not have sex-separated restrooms because there are radical progressives in government who have decided kids no longer deserve those very basic protections.
It also serves as a big fat commercial for homeschooling and private schools, which I will say is something, if you happen to be on the fence on that one, it might be something to consider. Where does this go from here? Like, how long until we know? Is he going to be able to get this through? Are you guys going to be able to stop it before it actually takes effect? What happens here?
So I wish I had a crystal ball and could tell you what would happen when, but what I do know is we are very much looking forward to our day in court, standing up for students and educators yet again to protect Title IX as it was originally written from this incredible attack by the Biden administration. We believe firmly that the rule is plainly unlawful, and we're optimistic that the court will see that as well. We look forward to stating our case and hopefully blocking this really terrible policy from harming America's students. Mm.
Angela Morabito, visiting fellow for the Independent Women's Forum and spokesperson for the Defense of Freedom Institute. They're the one that's doing this this lawsuit. It's really important. So can people just go to the website to find out the details on this?
Yes, I would encourage everybody to check out dfipolicy.org. We're also DFI Policy on Twitter or X. I forget what the name is these days, and Facebook and Instagram. So please go out and find us. We are constantly pushing out new news about Title IX and what this means for students and families.
Angela, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu.
There are those who lead and there are those who follow. And when it's time for you to buy or sell a house, you might want to have the former, not the latter. A number of years ago, Glenn got so fed up with the follower types, not to mention the leader types who didn't know what they were doing, that he decided to do something about it. He started realestateagentsitrust.com because he didn't want to go through all the same hassles that everyone seems to have to go through when you move. Realestateagentsitrust.com pairs you with the best real estate agent in your area, someone who knows the best practices, who understands the crazy housing market, someone who's a team leader and a closer, someone you can trust. How about that? If you're thinking about buying or selling a home or both, please get in touch with them. You'll see what I mean. Realestateagentsitrust.com. We've had so many people in the audience who have gone through this process and had great experience with realestateagentsitrust.com. You can be that person as well. Whether you're buying or selling a home, it's a free service to you. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Check it out today. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Donald Trump says he'd be willing to go to jail over gag order violations. This is yesterday. He said the judge has given me a gag order, says you'll go to jail if you violate it. He says, and frankly, you know what? Our Constitution is much more important than jail. It's not even close. I'll do that sacrifice every day. And he keeps getting these violations. As I've said to you before, I think Trump kind of wants this to happen. Frankly, I think he wants to go to jail for a couple days over this. There's a couple advantages to that. Number one, obviously, it gets people on his side fired up. I think there's a bunch of people in the middle that would see, wait a minute, you're putting him in jail because he tweeted in his own defense. I mean, that is, I think, too much for even a lot of people in the middle that would say that this is getting ridiculous. So I think it would help him on that aspect. Plus, God forbid one of these things goes wrong and he has to go to jail. It'll kind of like take the shock out of it. if he's already kind of gone for a couple of days over this. I'm not saying he's like, I can't wait to get to jail, but I think he's fine if they come after him for stuff like this. If because he put a couple Truth Social posts up, they're going to throw him in jail for a few days. I think that's going to do nothing but help him, frankly, and it's going to take the sting out of anything else that might come down the line. Now, he did. It was an interesting day today at the Stormy Daniels trial because Stormy herself went up and testified, told the story about the potential affair. Look, I mean, I told you this for years now. Do I think that he actually had sex with Stormy Daniels? Sure. I mean, he denies it. I don't know. I wasn't there. But there's a lot of detail attached to this that she's been relatively consistent on. I pointed out one inconsistency today that I noticed whose number she gave her number to. One time she said it was a bodyguard. Another time she said it was Trump himself. But like generally speaking, they've been pretty consistent over a multitude of years. This goes back. The first time she told the story was 2011, way, way, way before he was running for president as a Republican. So I don't know. Is it true? Maybe. But does it matter? Does that have anything to do with this? It's about business records. This is a case about business records. And the details got so sordid and salacious talking about all these things that happened in this room that the judge got pissed at the prosecution here, got pissed at the people coming after Trump, said, hey, stop asking her these questions. Stop trying to get these details out here. Stick to the facts. And a lot of legal experts say one of the things that's a downside of that approach is if the jury sees the judge get pissed off at you, that's not good for your side. That does seem like what happened here today, and we will see if that happens. Trump filed for a mistrial because of all these mistakes made by the prosecution. We'll see if that goes anywhere. Judge also pushing back a critical filing deadline in the Trump documents case. This is the one where he's probably most legally vulnerable, though, as I said, it's just not a case that I particularly care that much about. If he had documents at his house, okay, thank you for the information. But the left is pissed off about this because this is the one judge that doesn't outwardly hate Trump, just seems to be doing a normal, fair job. And every time one of these things gets passed off, they get very, very angry. The big deal here is you probably, if this one gets pushed back past the election, you probably don't have a criminal conviction you really, really love. And finally, here's where this is from The Hill. Here's where the Biden-Trump race stands 6 months out from the election. The DDHQ average, and one of these polling average places, actually has Biden up right now, 45 to 44.9%, if you go nationwide. Though the guy who's the director of data science at DDHQ, Scott Tranter, said, if you ask me who I'd rather be today, I'd rather be Donald Trump. And I went through this on State of the Race, which I mentioned earlier is a podcast you get for free if you're on the Studios America audio feed. It comes every week or so now, going to be coming more frequently as we get closer to the election. But I went over these numbers just to give you a sense of where we are right now, an actual quick state of the race. Let's say there's seven swing states out there: Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. Four of those seven are kind of clear lean Trump states right now. Four of the seven. These states range from about 4 points to about 6 point advantage for Donald Trump. Those are Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, and Georgia. If you take those states, you set them aside, you give those to Donald Trump. Okay. If you do that, Donald Trump has 268 electoral votes, and Joe Biden has 226. You might recognize 268 as being just a bit short of 270 electoral votes, the number that you need to actually win the election, which leaves Donald Trump in the position of needing to win one, at least, of these three states: Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. If he could pick off one of them, all of them, by the way, he has slight leads in right now. If he could pick off just one of them, he's president of the United States for another 4 years. If he cannot, then it swings back the other way. Joe Biden picks those three up and can win 272 to 268. That's how close this is. And it feels at times, to me at least, maybe this isn't you, but it is to me, feels like Trump's lead is bigger than that. It feels like maybe he's farther ahead because he has had some really splashy swing state polling. But that's where we are right now on the average. A lot of times you'll notice, you know, some of the worst polls for Trump don't get picked up by the conservative media. Some of the bad polls for Biden don't get picked up by the mainstream media. That's normal. That's why we go with averages. We kind of look at all these polls together and see where we are. I think that's the best approach. Anyway, State of the Race is available, of course. Wherever you get your podcast, just search for Stu Does America and follow the show. Do you like money? I like money. Money might be the root of all evil, but it's not evil itself. It's up to you whether you use your money for good or for evil. And Constitution Wealth is kind of the patriot's choice when it comes to wealth management, because if you want to avoid sending your money towards evil causes, you might avoid picking up a six-pack of Bud Light. You might avoid picking up, some Disney movie that you think is luring you in the wrong direction. You might not shop at Target. Whatever you think, whatever your line is, you might not do business with companies like that. But a few bucks here and there is not going to make a big difference as compared to your retirement plan. If you have a retirement plan with several hundred thousand dollars in it, and you're like, okay, I'm going to be retiring in, 10 years. I've got a wealth manager, but they're putting me in all these funds that support ESG, that support DEI, that support all these things. I want someone to untangle me from this. I want to be disentangled from all of this nonsense. Well, you could do that with Constitution Wealth. This is your opportunity to help build the parallel economy by working with an investment firm comprised of professionals who are patriots just like you. You can work with an advisor who shares your conservative patriotic values. Why wouldn't you do that? Why would you want to go anywhere else? Go to ConstitutionWealth.com, ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. You can sign up for a free consultation today. You're going to have a great time talking to these guys. They can walk you through every aspect of it. ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. I was on the air with a friend, Doug Gowdy from WGY in Albany this morning. And, I go on there, he'll send me a few topics that they might be talking about. This one he didn't send me, and I had never heard it before, and it just took me by surprise. It's just idiocy from the left once again. Here's Kathy Hochul talking about black students.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word a computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things. And I want the world open up to all of them, because when you have their diverse voices innovating solutions through technology, then you're really addressing society's broader challenges.
This is idiocy at its finest. I mean, look, having someone who's qualified can help you diversify, I guess, if you care about skin color. But someone who doesn't know about the word computer probably is not going to help you advance science all that much or computing. This is the typical left-wing racism that pops up over and over and over and over again. They think because they can just, I don't know if it's just like, I want to add in things to make it more impactful. Well, we need funding for students in computers, so let's say that black students will be more affected by it, and that will make people more easily persuaded by these idiotic opinions. It might just be that. To me, it seems worse than that. They seem to have this low expectation of what black students and other minority students are capable of doing. Here's the thing. Skin color's got nothing to do with whether you know what a computer is. Skin color's got nothing to do with whether you can look at technology appropriately. Skin color's got nothing to do with any of this. And, she's now apologizing and backing off of this because she's adult. Although I say, look, with the way she's talking, she would fit perfectly on a Biden ticket. Toss Kamala, make it Biden Hochul 2024. Okay, so here's what happened. When you go to the zoo, take your kids to the zoo, is there a favorite animal that they have, one that they always want to see? You want to make sure you get to the certain area of the zoo to see that one animal you absolutely love. For a lot of people, it would be the panda bear, right? Adorable little bear. You never really see them anywhere. It's a little bit different in China, where, pandas are from. They're available to be seen around the country, but maybe not in your area. So you go to the zoo, and this one zoo in China got some pandas. Pretty cool. Big attraction. The only problem with it is they weren't pandas at all. Zoo-goers outraged to discover panda exhibit was actually just dogs dyed black and white. Which is awesome. It would be a great Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. But here's the little pictures. And look, these are way more adorable than actual pandas. Little cutie dogs. Cute dogs. They're black and white. Look at them together. Aw, they're just adorable. And now I want one of those. I will say there's a Chinese pet owner or pet shop owner quoted in the story. He said, 10 years ago, the natural instinct of a Chinese person was to eat a dog. But now we're like Westerners and we want one as companions. The most popular breed now is the panda dog. So there you go. Get your panda dogs today. We'll see you tomorrow.